The start order is 1-7-4-2-3-9-8-5.
The Extra Lap RC Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Lap Podcast. Unfortunately this week, you just have me, so I had to drag somebody on. So this evening, we have a three-time Euros finalist, and you might be thinking of a real big name. I mean, I think it's a big name, but others might be thinking, oh, Ellis, or, you know, someone that's really made it. This guy actually quit racing and came back, silly boy. So this evening, we have Nick Goodall. How are you, Nick?
Good. Yeah, thank you for the introduction.
That's all right. Yeah, you know, three times you're a finalist. I'd be like, ah, who's this legend we got on? And you are a legend. You've made a Euros A final. There's not many people that say they've done it.
It's a long time, though.
Yeah.
Feels like another life.
You've still done it. So tonight, I've got a few questions. We'll just go through. We have no Joey. Unfortunately, he's got some lurgy, sounds like Darth Vader. And to be honest, he'd probably just come on here and upset someone anyway. So it's quite a nice evening without him. I'll miss him on here for about 30 seconds. Then I'll forget who he is. Okay, so we've got So, usual thing, got a couple of the world's most boring RC questions thrown in with some stealing from questions from other podcasts. So, my first thing is when did you get into RC and what got you into it?
So, really original answer, I'm sure. Tamiya Madcap Christmas. Dad built it for me as a surprise on Christmas Day, showed me how to drive it and smashed it into the curb, snapped the chassis in half. so it was down to BT's on Boxing Day for a new chassis, which he then fixed. And then out in the road, I think, playing with some lads around the corner, they had these, I don't know if you were racing them, but Nico Super Sprint, was it? Super Sprint?
Yep.
Something like that. And they were, they basically said, oh, we go racing at a local school on a Wednesday night, you should come along. So my dad wasn't really that interested at that point and sent me up there with them. And then he came up the next week to have a look. And I think he realized quite quickly that the Tamiya wasn't really up to what was going on. And he knew there was obviously a lot more to this because he's an engineer by trade, used to race motocross. So he was well into his tinkering about and mechanicking. So, yeah, quickly realized there's more to it. And then the next thing, I ended up getting a proper car. I think it was an Optima mid off someone at the club, just like a local one. And that was it. We were hooked, and then we were racing on Sundays, and then it didn't stop for sort of 10 years, I suppose. So I think I was about 10 when we first started.
What was your first, what I'd say, serious grade RC car?
I think from the Optima mid, we went to a Kyosho Laser ZXR.
Okay. Yep.
We were racing. We were going to some local stuff at Surrey Enhanced, run by Tony of Doka, and all the guys there running them. some really good guys there. Actually, I remember, still remember. In fact, I've got some videos online of some of those races. Andy Shaw, Dave Burton, Jamie Holmes, and some others like that. Manny, bless him.
Nice.
So yeah, we started getting a bit more serious from that, really, and then. I think we then bought a boss cat off Andy Shaw, John, when the Cat 2000 came out.
Yeah.
We bought Andy's ex-works boss cat, and that was it was game-changer, because we then started doing some of the radio race car races, and it was, it was a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever race at Hampshire Racing Centre?
Yeah, that was our local track. We were down there every weekend. Did you race there?
So I did a national there once in, like, I want to say probably 2001, 2000, 2001. I think it was like the last or one of the last nationals they had there. And
did Danny McGee win that one?
I think so. It was a long time. this is what I remember from it. There was this young racer. He turned out to be a little bit good in the end. They came to me and said, I need to build this car to race with. And he had just had boxes of bits, and he was trying to build a Predator. And for some reason, we had a tent there. We had light in there. So this racer said, oh, can I, you know, sit in your tent and build this Predator just out of like bits of like two or three cars. So he ended up sat there, I think, for like 6 hours that night building that car, and it happened to be Lee Martin. Before he was ridiculously fast. But it was. That's kind of my memories of Hampshire Racing Centre, is him sat building this
and
car.
That car, I believe, was probably the Predator that I raced in my last year of racing, because when we packed up, Pete, Lee's dad, bless him, came and bought various bits, and Lee then used that Predator and won the F2s in 2002.
That's
so
right.
That probably would have been that car, to be fair. He came up to the club because the club we were racing at on Wednesdays, my dad ended up running it after a few years, and it was actually at the school that Lee went to in Berkeley, just outside Newbury. So Lee and his dad started coming up, and got into it quite seriously, as we all do, and and it went from there, really. So Lee was always going to be quick. You could always see that, and we had some great times. Hampshire was a great local track. We loved it there.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of times, and apparently it's actually still, well, the last time I asked Tony, it was still there under lots of weeds, bushes and various growth, but it was actually still there. I don't know if they've built on it yet.
I think Lee went over there a few years back and just had a look just to see what was there, and you could still see the jumps were still under the undergrowth, and bits of pipe were still there. But I think they lost it because they were meant to build on it, and then obviously here we are 20 years later, they never have. So it'd be quite small, though, by today's standards, I think.
It would be, yeah. I mean, it would be tiny, but I can remember the place quite well. So what was your first kind of... So you got your Cat 2000. What was your first kind of big results, or, you know, what did you start getting?
I think the juniors used to be quite a big event for us. So under-13s... Yeah. The first year, I think I finished second to Richard Taylor. It was a really, really wet track in Leicester Way, I think. And then the next year, a young Mr. Neil Cragg turned up. He was in the same category as me, slightly younger than me, about a year younger. But he was obviously quick even then. So it was always a battle between, I think, me, Matthew Moore, Chris Heath, a couple of others, all just trying to chase and trying to keep up with Neil, really. But then I got a second, I think, there with Neil those year, and then for under-16s as well, we had a few battles. I think I managed to win at least one leg in the two-wheel drive once. And then after the juniors, it was probably I won the Radio Race Car Championship, the modified class. I think that was late 90s. I can't remember exactly what year. And then I think 98 was my best sort of biggest change that year. I made a first National A final, and I made a Euros A that year. So it was that was a sort of big year for me, and it all kind of became a bit more serious. I think I was like 15, 16, and then it became, start to take it a bit more seriously when the results start coming, and it got a bit more serious. And
I think we make a Euros A final, and you got to start taking it serious.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good old Joey Rain assist, to be absolutely honest, in four-wheel drive, because we had it was one of those meetings where I think I was in like 8 or 9, and then it would rain just after we finished, and then the track obviously slowed. So me and I think Philip Merton TQ'd it.
He was
in the same heat as me, or one after, and we were just seemed to time quite well. But I was still in the B in two wheels, so it wasn't like I was massively far off. But with the old Yokomo MX4, probably might have struggled if it had been dry all day. But you take you have to.
Where was that Euros?
That was Teesside.
Oh, okay.
They had a cool grass track with a massive wooden banking corner at the end. That was cool. I love that. We did have a national there, I think, the year before as well, actually. But that was the only times I think we ever raced there, if I remember.
I remember hearing about Teesside.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really good. But then a lot of those tracks were just grass with a few sort of man-made jumps and, you know, banking and stuff like that. That was sort of how they were, really, wasn't it, back then?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But good fun.
So you made another two Euros A finals. Where were those two?
Yeah, so 99 was Austria, and I didn't have any there, which was a tough track to go to. And then 2000 was Sweden, and I made it in four-wheel the Cat 3000, that was.
Yeah.
And then 2001, which was my last year of racing, that was in south of France with a Predator. And that was my best. I think I qualified fourth and I finished fifth.
Right.
But the Predators were ridiculous at that point. I think Ian Kenningly TQ'd and won. Craig was third or fifth, I think, behind me or just in front of me. But yeah, the cars were, it was a really, really hard track on them because it was dirt with some quite big jumps. But once you put it out well, it was, it was brilliant. It was a really good, and that was a good high point for me. I think we got to that stage. We'd hit a pretty much the highest point we thought we'd probably get to. And I was starting to get into real cars and girlfriends and whatever else. So, the racing became a little bit, I don't want to say stale, but, you know, you start, my dad was getting fed up with doing everything, I think, on the evening. And I was off out doing what I want, not prepping the cars. And he was sort of not fair on him to do it all. So that was it.
So your last year was 2001. And if you'd have carried on, you'd have got to do a home Euros the following year, but you quit.
I know. Yeah, that was a big mistake, wasn't it? Because it was at your place, wasn't it? At Tiverton.
At Tiverton, yeah. So
yeah, I loved it then. Yeah, it was harder to keep up with it, though, because without obviously social media and forums like they are now, I was sort of struggling to keep up with the racing, really, at that point. Because I think I got out of it and kind of turned my back on it, thinking you don't want to follow it too closely. And then, a few years later, Oopal started up and you started seeing pictures and race reports and stuff, thinking, oh, quite good to be able to follow it again now and see all the same faces and names and stuff. So yeah, I should have carried on, but you live and learn. It's just taken me 20 years to get back to it.
Exactly. Now the Euros at Tiverton were, as I've spoken about this podcast before, was quite a cool event. I think the unfortunate lasting memory of it is the owner ringing us up when it had finished that week because it was really hot.
Right.
I think he used to have a sprinkler system in there too because it's a horse riding arena. And after we'd finish having like a national in there or a winter series, he'd just water it and then go in with his tractor and break it up.
Okay.
Well, we get this phone call. He's turned on his like sprinkler water system to soak it, to break it up. And the place is filling up with water.
And
the dirt got so hard with the weeks running on it because it the dirt
full week versus a weekend of nationals. I guess it's quite different. Exactly. Yeah,
and I just always remember him saying, "Yeah, I may have to go and like hire some sort of machine to break the dirt up because the water isn't touching it." I just always remember
Jesus.
That, it was
I used to love that. That was a great. That was the only sort of indoor. Good sized dirt track we had then.
And, it was. I can remember I sort of got back into RC after we moved back from the States here and going to Tiverton. I think it was just like America, indoors, dirt.
Well, this is everywhere is in the UK.
Yeah. Well, what I didn't take into account was it was in the winter, it was freezing cold, they had icicles on the indoors of the place.
I remember having to go and sit in the car just to warm up for 5 minutes.
Just to warm up.
Because your hands were just. Go numb. Like we used to do all the winter series down there because my grandparents actually lived in Tiverton, so we used to go and stay down there on Saturday and then race on the Sunday. And my step granddad at that point used to get up and make us a massive fry up at sort of 6 o'clock in the morning and then go to the track. But yeah, that was cool there.
And it's just crazy to think like Neil Cragg would come down with his dad just for that race.
Yeah,
just
practicing for the Nationals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell of an event.
Really good turnout. We used to get like William Mitchum would come down there, Kevin Moore, Ellis, all those guys.
It was good, but it might come back one day, but maybe not there, maybe somewhere else.
Those era of cars as well, those old the rear motor stuff, that was just obviously built for, that's what they were built for and designed around, and they were so good on that sort of track. I don't know what the modern stuff, because it seems to all be slick tires and additives and stuff now, from what I see. Can't imagine what they're like, but
yeah, I think people always go, oh, it's the good old days and we should bring back racing on dirt at like Tiverton. And I'm like, yeah, but then you got to police the tires and the additive and you know, all the nasty things that come along with dirt. I mean, I think judging from all the drama, not drama, but all the checks at the Worlds in Phoenix, is if you're going to have a race on dirt, just have a spec additive and then everyone's in the same boat.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess even with that, you then get people going, yeah, but he's using special additive. No, it never stops.
More of it than I was.
You got it. So, but hey, yeah. It's definitely something to maybe one day get back to. So you obviously quit racing in 2001 before the Tiverton Euros. back in those days, I was listening to a podcast with Ryan Mayfield yesterday. Amazing. If anyone gets a chance to listen to it, Will and Trigger podcast, Ryan Mayfield. It's 3 hours of a guy that has been there, seen it, done it, and definitely knows what he's talking about when it comes to RC. Unreal. Mm. Worth a listen if you've got 3 hours.
Oh, cool.
It's that good. It doesn't even feel like 3 hours. You know, I mean, he even goes into things like what he earns to race RC cars, which sounds an amazing figure till you break it down into hours, and then it's actually not that good.
But it's something you enjoy that much, right?
It's something you enjoy, yeah. You know, and he speaks.
We do. We've all done it without getting paid, so
exactly. So, but one of the things he brought up that I'm gonna this is gonna be like my new question to anyone that's traveled abroad. And I know there's like Drescher's got some amazing stories, but have you got any rental car stories? Because it seems like RC cars and rental cars go together well.
I need to be careful with
well, you cannot name people. No, just don't name. Well, just...
Yeah, okay. There was, I know, I won't mention names, but I think it was in, I think it was Sweden, actually. We had a rental minibus because it was a massive group of us, and we were actually all staying at like a, it was like a handball center, like a massive hostel almost. They had dorms, and we were all staying in there. Yeah. And, a couple of the dads, should we say, volunteered to drive us all into Malmo town centre for a night out. I can't remember if it was halfway between the two and four-wheel drive. But yeah, you can imagine it was an experience, and there was some off-roading for sure, going back and forth to the hostel. I think there was a quick way, which was across what wasn't even really a road. And then there was obviously the roadway, but off-road guys, you know what it's like. But no, there is far worse stories that I can't really can't recall all the detail. But there were some very sorry looking hire cars at the end of a meeting left in the hotel car park. I wasn't even honest to drive, so it's nothing to do with me. But
exactly,
yeah, there were some great moments back then, and also people jumping cars out of hotel windows, like model cars, obviously. That was always quite funny, and off the roof of, I'm sure he won't mind me saying actually, but Mick and Neil were having a bit of a nightmare at the Worlds in Finland in 99, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the Predator was not behaving at all, and it ended up going up onto the roof because that track was a huge domed indoor arena, and somebody managed to get it up onto the roof to be driven right up to the very crest of it and then jumped off the end. And that was... that was the end of a bad week, so it was it made everyone smile at least. But
I had heard that story. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more, but it's risky when you start naming people, isn't it?
It's quite tame. The stories Ryan were telling was like people ripping rear axles off of cars while jumping them at nitro races, and then phoning up the car rental people and going, yeah, someone ran out in front of me and I just hit the curb and they just replaced the car, you know, like
it was making a strange noise. I don't know what's happened.
Exactly. So yeah, just absolutely crazy. But I know Craig Drescher has told me some interesting rental car stories.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a few of the, those were older lads to us at the time that were,
I heard Ellis is pretty good at rally car driving.
Yeah, there was a lot of that went on.
So that's the pass. And the next simple question into it is, you know, all of a sudden you've made this comeback and with quite a bang, I might add. So what inspired you to want to come back racing toy cars?
It's Lee's fault, really. He lives not far from me, and we've sort of maintained a friendship throughout, you know.
Yeah.
About the last 20 odd years of, you know, even outside of racing, we were always good friends. So he did build a track in his garden in sort of 2007-ish, and there, I did have a play then because it was just right on my doorstep, and I couldn't resist. In fact, that's when I met Joe and his dad and his brother Dan for the first time.
Is that the famous bus rostrum?
That's it. Yeah, open top double decker. Yeah. That was. And Lee had a nice little log cabin that he was sort of living in. He had a massive TV, so we'd be playing like Pro Evo on PlayStation and then going up and racing. It was just a big mess around me. So I did some racing then because I it was so close, and it got me. I kind of got back into a little bit there for about a year, and then I got married, and that ended it very quickly. and then 13 years later, the marriage then ended. So
back to racing.
Back to racing in a way. Yeah, I mean, I actually bought my old double X off someone who had it stored up, and he messaged me one day, I think before lockdown, and was like, "I've got your car, would you be interested?" I was like, how much do you want for it? He was like, 150 quid. I was like, 150 quid for like a 20-year-old lossy? What are you talking about? Really? And I looked online, saw what they were going for, and I thought, oh, can't really pass it up. So I bought it, and then gave it to Lee and said, could you just make it run? Because it had no electrics.
He
put some ridiculous 6-turn brushless motor in it, and I didn't know anything about. And I said to the kids over lockdown, I was like, oh, we'll get the car and you can see what it's like. And it was just ridiculous. It was so fast. And somebody then mentioned about revival meetings that were going on in the Iconic RC stuff. So I started looking at that on Facebook, and I got hooked into doing a meeting with those guys. And that was brilliant fun, honestly. That was just, I know you guys aren't massive vintage fans, but it was just so much fun to see people that I hadn't seen for 20 years running cars we had raced for 20 years. You know, it did bring back a lot of nostalgia. And that John Weston just does an unbelievable job. You know, the money he raises for Parkinson's and all the organisation, it's phenomenal. Yeah.
I mean, I love the vintage scene. I just struggle with cars that aren't vintage when they think they are.
I'm the
purist kind of, you know. The electrics I understand because electrics are so much better.
Yeah, that's just easier. I struggle
with big bores on a vintage car.
Fair enough.
But people love it, and you know the numbers he gets, and you know what? It's bringing something popular into RC, and it's getting people back into it. It's all good for the industry. Yeah. So it's all good for racing.
Yeah, and you look at all the re-releases now that, you know, Schumacher are doing, Kyoto, keeping them going and helping their businesses, which has got to be good.
Joey's just been around vintage because he's not old enough to understand it.
I think he would have raced a B4, I guess. That's probably as old as he gets, isn't it?
Becoming
vintage.
So
I did a revival, and then I just found, as much as I enjoyed it, couldn't really race anywhere else. It was one other local meeting on it. It was like a vintage thing, so I did that. And then I said to Lee, I was like, oh, quite fancy having a go. And he was like, oh, you should come up to Slough on a Friday night. Sam and Yaz run a really cool indoor track.
Yeah.
So he was like, I've got an old Yokomo you can just have a go with. And so that was probably financially the worst mistake I've made in 20 years, but it was great. So we went and had literally a few laps, and I felt quite at home with it, and thought, oh, this is quite fun actually. Like, the car's, it seems really strong. It hasn't broken. I haven't had to change the motor. I haven't had to touch it. I just put a battery in it and just put it back down again. So then I said to him, you know, I'm going to get a car. Told me which Yokomo to get and all the bits.
Yeah.
I think I did 3 meetings with it, and he went, oh, I'm changing to Schumacher. so I was like, I don't want to be running something nobody I know is. So I'll speak to Trish, because I knew Tristram from when Lee had his track. He used to come up there and help and do the track stuff. So I knew then. So I just said to him, you know, what do I need to get? And he sort of helped me out. And then I sort of did a couple of races, and then they offered me a sort of nostalgic drive, as it were, because I used to run their cars back in the day. So they helped me out massively. And after a few beers one night, I saw the national entries and thought, oh, I could just see if I get in. I probably won't, because I wasn't sure how the gradings worked, and whether it'd be oversubscribed, and if I was a F5 or whatever. And then it turned out I was actually still an F3.
That's correct.
And I got in, so I was like, oh, I better pull my shit together here and do a bit of racing. So I did a couple of local races, and then we all went up to Hood for the first national. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire. But it was so good. It was so nice to to sort of, I don't think I've ever done nationals without any form of kind of pressure, because even at the age of like 16, 17, 18, it was getting serious and you feel like you have to perform and there's people you want to make sure you beat in and all that, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it was like heat two, I think I was in, and I thought, well, I just got to enjoy it and not have any pressure. So, yeah, it was great fun. And my girlfriend's parents live about 40 minutes away from there. So we stayed up there and went and had dinner with them. It was great. And then Mendip was the next one. So it all kind of fell into place, really. Mendip went really, really well. I think that was suited me and these old school guys a bit more.
Where did you qualify at Mendip?
I think I was eighth in the B. I think I had four top 20 qualifiers, and then I finished third. I had a really good final. Everyone crashed, and
that is impressive because that, you know, it's not the easiest. Good. And like I think, like you said, a little bit it suited a little bit of the old school driver, and
it didn't have the high grip stuff, did it? And yeah, it was but I loved it. I really enjoyed that, and the cars were brilliant. You know, they just. The tires and stuff, they just work, don't they? They seem to be.
They do. Yeah.
You can adjust everything on them. They do still seem to just kind of work as they are.
Certainly do.
Yeah, so I loved it, and it's just been really good fun. You know, seeing so many people that, you know, there's so many young people out now that we didn't have that kind of amount of youngsters. And you know, when me and sort of Neil were in our sort of mid to late teens, there wasn't many sort of youngsters around. It was always sort of slightly older guys that were still dominating and doing really well. So it's amazing to see how far it definitely looks like it's progressed in the last few years for the amount of youngsters, you know,
hugely.
properly fast, which is brilliant, because that's what you should, shouldn't it? You know?
Yeah, that's what we try to, I suppose, endorse is get these youngsters up through. I know we got some different ideas for next year to try and grow it a little bit more at a club level for the youngsters getting involved. So it's something we're working on looking, because the nationals are, it's such a high profile series now that that isn't where you're going to get your first time club racers. They're not going to.
It's too big a jump, isn't it? You probably put them off more than anything. Yeah,
so, you know, let's see if we can maybe take something from the nationals and put back into the clubs to try
get
more juniors racing, you know, even if it's give the clubs a little bit of money to give free racing to juniors, or even, you know, to buy them sets of tires or something. So the juniors, you know, they when they turn up to a club meeting, they're made to feel quite welcome, and they either get free racing or set a tire or some of that. And that's how I think we're going to grow this hobby.
That's a good shout. I mean, Sam at Slough, he's got some really, you know, he's got lots of youngsters coming up through there, which seem to be getting quicker and getting into it. And it's just that next step on, isn't it, is doing on a Friday night and stuff's fine. It's just convincing the parents as much as anything that they can come and do it on a weekend as well. Step up to sort of outdoor club racing or, you know, winter series meets can be a bit daunting, but once they do it, it's sort of natural progression, isn't it? So
I mean
nationals are then too big a step, so it's
I mean, that's a cool thing that Silverstone did for in their winter series, is they would always give the juniors a free set of tires, which I thought was really cool. A really good step by them.
Yeah, and it might inspire the parents to think, well, there's more to, you know, we're getting something back from this. Yeah. It's not all just throwing money out, is it? But
exactly.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And I think what the Associated guys have done as well, I think it was Pete's idea, wasn't it, where they put some of the youngsters they've been pitting with, like, the more experienced racers and stuff. I think that was a really good, good idea. Even though really, I would put myself at the moment with those youngsters, because I've been felt pretty clueless at times. So I just look at Lee and go, what do I do? How do I change the speed? What do I change? What do I do? But it's all, I can't believe how much there is to learn. So
there is
those youngsters with some of those guys is a great idea.
Yeah, no, that was a hats off to CML moment. That was really, really good. And hopefully they'll continue it this year and do the same, or next year, sorry.
So, yeah, no, it makes sense, doesn't it?
No, it's really,
I mean,
good.
I think when I was racing, looking back, that Radio Race Car series was good for that reason, because you had your national series, but the Radio Race Car ran along almost alongside it.
Yeah.
Some weekends, yeah, I think it was on at the same time, and others it was offset. And you'd, some weeks you'd get like Drescher and people that would turn up, and it was really exciting to see. I remember once it was 95, just after the Worlds, and he turned up with the B2, you know, the RC10, and no one had seen one. It was like, that was a really cool thing. But that championship was, you could still go along and do well without the pressure of it being an actual national. So that, yeah, it's difficult to know how you get an alternative series, but sometimes I think
that could be quite cool. We had that with Upal the last few years. You know, Upal was kind of, people would go and do the Upal series that maybe didn't do nationals, and it was a little bit of a different event. And I know I think they were looking or talking about, I hope they don't mind me saying this, but looking at maybe doing that again, which is really, you know, it's a great, a series that people that are a little bit new to it might go and try, or, you know, just want to go and have a good time. And certainly, you know, I've said to the guys, anything we can do to help it, we will. So,
is it regionals have always been good as well, haven't they, for getting people in between stage. We've got some really good tracks around now for our region. I know that sometimes they're a bit spread out, but there are some really good tracks as well. So,
I mean, that is something
to do that.
We've been looking at is, or maybe remapping the regionals. But when you actually look at it and you get them all on a map and you look, it's really hard to do. Really, really hard because of the spread of the area.
Yeah, but I think what you've done is good, where you now have like Swindon do one for our region and one for the Southwest, and had one for us, one for the mid. But I think that's a really good way, because the tracks are then obviously getting more big meetings and hopefully they get a bit more money.
Exactly.
Yeah, it used to be quite a tight area, but it'd be the same sort of tracks you went to every time.
Oh, 100%. It was, you hit the nail on the head then. So that was your first year doing nationals back last year, is that right? Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
So go for a second.
On we go. Yeah, so I've got a four-wheel drive as well now, which is, having done just two-wheel, I think really the cost of going there and being set up is, you know, doing one more race day is not really that much more, at least that's what I tell myself. So I figured I may as well try and make the most of it. If you're going to travel somewhere, you may as well just do the both days make the best of it. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm running, obviously, the Schumacher stuff again. So, looking forward to it.
Euros again, ever? On the radar?
What was that? Sorry, Euros?
Would you ever do Euros again?
No, I don't. I think if there was one if it was ever in the UK again, I might consider it. But I'd struggle to justify or explain missing a family holiday for me to go and race cars again. I think that would be a tough one to get through, but.
You want to try explaining to your wife when you go to Vegas in Arizona and you say, it's only for racing, hun. Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't even racing.
No, exactly. I know. Especially when I got married in Vegas in 2005, never been back.
Wow.
The first time I go back is
an hour. That's the reason you go.
Yeah. So she was, bless her. She puts up with a lot. I'm surprised.
I can't imagine she'd have wanted to spend a week watching the cars, though, either, would she, really?
No, but I think she would have happily spent a week sat next to the pool in our Airbnb. But
true.
I'm still waiting to come home to find all my RC gear on the front doorstep one day. Bless her.
No, I think I think the Euros would be as much as they were fun back in my day. I had financial help from my parents then. And the kit was cheaper when it was free.
We just need Euros back in the UK, and then you can spend a week in a field racing toy cars.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be fine. Must be, although it's only been, 2 years since it was here, isn't it? I suppose it might be a while yet.
Yeah.
Is that how it works? Do they spread it around still? Is that how?
They spread it around every year, but I'm sure James would love to hold another Euros at Robin Hood.
From what I saw this year, I'm sure people would rush back there in a heartbeat from all over, wouldn't they?
Yes, I would.
We won't go there. That's fine.
No, it's fine. Well, I mean, they're going to go race on carpet in Sweden this year, so that's going to be fun.
When was the last Worlds here? Was it 93 still?
Basildon was the last Worlds.
Is it? And is it still, do they still have to be on dirt?
Nope, they can be on any surface. So we've had we've had worlds on Astro, we've had worlds on we've not had one on carpet yet. And personally, I hope that never happens. I hate carpet racing. It's like the devil to me. I just hate it. I get it, and it's great we have it in this country because obviously the weather doesn't allow us to go outdoors much. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Carpet racing. Yeah, you don't want to see a world's.
No.
I don't think the world's could be. But a good, decent Astro track or something would be pretty cool.
I mean, I would love to get the world's back in this country. And it is something that I sat in a committee meeting last year and said, look, I want to do this chairman thing for 5-6 years, but I'd like to finish it off with having a world's and then just walk away.
Wow. And, what a send off that'd be.
And yeah. And if things seem to be going in the right direction at IFMAR now, and if they go in the right direction at EFRA, you know, maybe it is something that we could pull off and do.
Yeah.
It's just, well,
maybe that's what James should go for there. Another Euros, just go for a Worlds instead.
Well, that's what I've said to him. I think the only thing that always worries us about a Worlds at, say, like Robin Hood is the weather.
Yeah, I suppose it
has got that chance. It could rain all week, which wouldn't be a problem, but at the moment, the rules state in IFMAR that you can only have one tire.
One compound, one tire. You can't mix them.
Exactly. Right, okay. So, you know, if someone with some common sense can get in there and change it so we could have, you know, a different compounds.
Yeah.
Job done. There would not be an issue. So hopefully that, you know, and these things are going on in the background. Maybe
it sounds so simple as well, doesn't it? You think, even if you just said it has to be the same tire, but you've got two compounds of it, you're only ever going to use the right one in the right weather. It's not, you know,
yeah.
The dry one's not going to be any good in the wet, and the wet one's not going to be any good in the dry. So it's not like a big advantage for someone, is it?
Exactly. You know, they have amazing pump systems at Robin Hood to get rid of the water and, you know.
And they can avoid bits of the track, can't they, if they need to, you know, with the big, like, dips and stuff. You can avoid those bits.
That's it. But I've only been to two worlds, but it's the personnel, it's the staff. Like, I mean, both worlds had 20 people working there. And to do it properly, you've got to have 20 paid people working there. You can't. This hobby, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, it doesn't quite run on volunteers as much anymore. And time's more precious to us all. You know, it's not an easy thing to come by, and it's hard to get people to come and volunteer a week to stand in a field and put a car in a box.
Yeah.
So you got to start looking at, you know, raising money and getting a big sponsor and perhaps paying people to come there for a week. And, you know, for someone like James, the biggest hassle he's always spoke to me about at Euros is getting people to help. A lot of people go, we're going to have a Worlds, and they're like, I want to go, I want to come and help. And then the event rolls around, and you're like,
they're not around.
Right, exactly. It's got to be something that, you know, and I'm sure the BRCA can roll some numbers up and get some people involved. But yeah, it is something I would love to have that legacy of getting the Worlds back in this country. And
30 years is it's mad.
It's too long. Especially how big of a nation we are with RC racing.
Even Europe, there's not many, is there, that do it in a bigger scale.
No, exactly. And when we went to Phoenix, I think we had the second or third biggest team there. And it wasn't hugely in numbers behind the American team, considering it was their home race.
Yeah.
I think it was
and they
us.
They could probably have as many as they wanted, really.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're a big RC nation, so we should have a Worlds here, and it's something I will keep working on.
I can't believe we were talking about this recently, but I can't believe there's not somebody in this community of RC that hasn't won the lottery and hasn't just decided to build a big indoor sort of permanent facility. You know,
exactly.
In the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't cost that much.
What I find annoying is, especially, I mean, we're too far south to really want to do anything, but there's quite a few where empty buildings in just around where I live, huge empty buildings. And you'd think there's someone paying business rates on that building to sit there empty. Yeah. Even if you just say, well, can I have it for 5 years and we'll just pay the business rents? Because it's going to sit there empty for 5 years anyway.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's frustrating. But I did start doing the lottery about 3 weeks ago. And if I won, if I won big, I guarantee I would build something, but it'd be right in the middle of the country because that's where it would
have they'll have the Worlds and Euros every year.
And yeah, we'll have it every year. And we'll have every national there.
Yeah. And pay everyone's travel and everything else.
Now go down really well. We had two nationals at Robin Hood last year, and some people thought the world had ended. So,
Wow.
I know.
Jesus. What's happening with Mendip? Is that going to be? I'm not suggesting you can talk about where nationals will be, but is that club still going to be able to run for the next couple of years? Because is there an issue with the ground?
I think as a club track, it's going to remain. I guess by a year-by-year basis. If you remember when you went there, and where we all parked down that right-hand side, that's now all mobile homes as we speak. It's like four mobile homes down there. So
we've got
parking.
Pitting, we've got camping.
Yeah. So basically, it's just slowly going to get homes more on the right-hand side, and then on the plan is to have them down the left-hand side. Well, once that starts happening, who's going to want to rent a mobile home, wake up in the morning to 40 ugly toy car racers wandering to the track with Ogio bags? So I would say that will be the end of it. But they've got some go for another year, so they'll do regionals, etc. But gutted. But in a way, a bit like the world thing, when I got involved in that club, it was always, it'd be awesome to get a national here.
You've done that, yeah.
And the funny thing is we had an end of season final there, went to the meeting where all the regional reps vote for to have a national, and I didn't want one there. I was dead against it because I knew how much work it would be. And, I was very kind of conscious that people go, look, he's now the chairman, and look, he gets a national at his home track.
I see. Yeah.
So I was like, no, and I don't get a vote anyway, but it was very much, don't want to go there. And Tony Avoca was like, yep, we got to go there. It's absolutely brilliant. Love the end of season finals. And that's it. It got like the second highest amount of votes, and we ended up going there.
Wow. Do you know what, actually, it did remind me a little bit of a sort of modern-day Hampshire racing centre. Had that similar.
Exactly.
No massive big jumps, but just some nice pictures and in a little corner. It's nice. I liked it.
But I would like to, if Mendip goes, to build another track down here. And there's I've got a few people I do work with that have got the land to maybe do it. But the problem is I can't. I'm horrible because I'm a control freak. I want to be involved in it. I want it done my way, but I can't give it the time or the effort it deserves.
And I think people don't realize, do they, how much work it actually takes to build a track?
Exactly. So I'm waiting for
Steve Brown at Torch, and the effort those guys put into that place is
unbelievable. Yeah. And as you probably saw, Steve Brown won our section award at the AGM 2 weeks ago for.
They're doing some good things, aren't they?
Yeah, doing good things with the school and with the and moving a track. They got told you're shutting down, and within like 6 months they've got a new track.
And it's a great, it's a really good facility as well, isn't it? The parking's great, the track's massive, it's a really good setup.
It's good. And again, they have a very, very good team of volunteers and helpers. And that's what you have to have.
Yeah, definitely.
You certainly don't want to turn up to get ready for a national on the Monday, taking the time off work and be the only one there. I'm not saying it happened
to
me. No, it's
pretty disheartening, isn't it? Yeah. It's a pretty common story. I think that was, 30 years ago, my dad was running that club indoors, and we used to get a similar thing. People would all turn up at 7 wanting to race, but we'd been there since 6, rolling out carpet, taping it down. You get probably 4 or 5 people. It's the same people every week.
Exactly.
And it does get a bit frustrating, but it's different when people got young kids and they want to just can't really just be out that whole time. I get it. An hour away,
I often hear sort of people that are running clubs go, "Oh, we've got no one that can help. It's rubbish," and it's all doom and gloom. And I don't think there's people in the clubs that don't want to help. I think, like you just said, there's too many outside pressures that they can't just go and help. It's quite hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Just getting the time off to be at a race is probably enough.
Exactly. I mean, it's the old saying, I raced last Friday indoors at a local club called Caldecott. Great place in a village hall. Lovely people. Good little club. Right. All work together.
But old school.
Really impressed with the place. And we were packing up and I was being lazy, packing my own stuff up. And Joss goes racing with me. He goes, I've gone and put a couple bits away. And I said to him, I said, if everyone just puts one or two bits away, you'll be amazed how fast it gets put away.
Yeah.
You know, and so it doesn't take a lot. It's just hard going. But I've also seen it in the past where people go out to try and help build a track and they build a section and someone else comes on and goes, that's not right, and moves it.
Yeah, once you do that, do it again.
Yep, you got it. Once you do that once, you're never going to get the help again.
Yeah.
It's a vicious
circle. Then you get like Sam, his tracks he builds are absolutely brilliant at Slough, but it has to be all packed. It has to all be away and done by like 10, otherwise they get stung with massive fees and stuff. So it's pressures on, you know. That's quite hard.
But how wrong is that? That they, you know, they have a financial penalty and they're giving something to the community. It's not great.
It doesn't get that coverage, though, does it? A lot of people don't realize that.
And I don't think it ever. I'm not sure if it will ever get that sort of coverage because, as I've watched and said in many videos, our format to the outside world is not that exciting. The only format that's ever going to get coverage is if you do like a ready race, so everything's a race.
Yeah,
you know, a ready race with a bit of drama that will get on TV.
Yeah.
But they were talking, I don't know, this is going back last year, there was a big race in the States for money, this Visions 8 scale race.
And
Mayfield and Testman had quite a to-do. I think
I've seen that footage on the rush stream. They have a proper bust up, don't they?
And that's
what you want to see, though, don't you?
Well, that's it. They asked Mayfield, and Mayfield said, you know, did you watch it back? And he said, well, because they did quite... had that Visions race was like a proper filmed TV program that you could go and watch.
Wow.
And he said, I watched it. And he said, but they cut all that out. He said, that was the best bit of it, all the drama. And we didn't get to see any of it, you know? And
that's the difference, isn't it? We'd be mortified, but Americans, they want to see that.
They want to see it, you know? And I, funny enough, was talking to him, at the Worlds and about that incident, and I was trying to explain that if you did that in the UK, you'd probably get your license taken off and you wouldn't be racing again, because as soon as you get physical, you're in deep poo-poo. So
it can turn even more serious than that if you're not careful, can't it?
It can. I mean, you only got to I'm sure you've at the whole RC world seen it. I don't know much about it, and I'm not gonna say don't care, but you know what happened in Sweden this weekend with David Rolliford and Jessica Paulson. I mean, it's not ugly, good reading. It's ugly, and I'm sure it sucks for both sides. And I think
you don't want to be drawn into it either way, but you need to justify yourself, don't you?
We've had both on the podcast. They're both very nice people, and it's a shame, you know. But it's always the he said she said thing, and but it doesn't. I don't think it being
the problem as well. Though now it's all on video as well, isn't it? Someone's always videoed it. You can't even deny it. You know.
Yeah.
I remember at National. I won't say who, but I remember at National in the sort of late 90s, and during a race, somebody had a row, and one of them went along and turned the other guy's radio off.
Radio off
mid race.
Yeah, I know who that was. Yeah.
It was funny when I look back, but wouldn't have been at the time, but it's And I remember another person like throwing a punch at somebody at a radio race car and on the rush, you know, things like that. And but now it would guarantee by Monday morning, everybody would have watched it somewhere and had their say. But
sometimes 100%.
It's good, but it's also not so nice if you're involved in it, I suppose.
I mean, what's good with our hobby, and I hope it doesn't go down the route of using video when there's an incident on track.
Oh, well, VAR for other cars.
Oh, don't. I mean, the one thing
we shouldn't have even said that out loud. That's.
But it's true. And the thing is one thing I'm amazed by, and I've only seen it once. There was an incident. I can't remember what it was. Someone goes, "I've got video footage of it," and then someone else said, "I've got video footage of it." So it's from two different angles, and it looked like two different incidents.
Really?
And that's where you could never, ever really, unless you've got a camera following the car from above, so you can see what position
it's in. Super slow motion as well.
Exactly. You're never going to bet.
Cars do funny things, don't they? Sometimes on bumpy, cars will flip over because the scale speed they're doing and that, and it can actually look like somebody's hit them, but it's probably not always the case. But you generally know if you're actually racing, don't you? You know if it was...
Or
if someone's done it deliberately.
Exactly.
It all happens so fast.
Or you just ram them up the inside like Ryan Clark did at the weekend, but that's another story.
Don't believe it. I wouldn't hear a bad word about him. I'm sure it's
about Ryan. No, I'm sure it was a racing incident, but I promised I know I'd give him some grief. So well, that's been a good hour of chatting.
Flown by.
Anything as a racer, is your chance. Anything you want to ask me about nationals or anything, I can answer most things. And I'm sure people out there want some info. We've just had an AGM. Is there anything off the top of your head you can think, I wanted to ask you this?
Tires, is there? Oh, I don't know. Is that worth going down that route?
No. Oh, no, it's perfectly fine. I have no issue with that. It remains the same.
Will it? I mean, it doesn't really worry me because
I
think at some point in the last year I've ended up buying nearly every single tire I probably would have ever needed. But I just wonder whether will it be track specific or will it end up being just a blanket?
So the great way, that's a brilliant question, because I can explain this and this is how it works. And, people that come to the meeting can tell you this. So the tracks. So we had a vote at the AGM. Someone put in a proposal to go to be able to have two different types of rear tire or stick to the single that we've done in the last 2 years. The vote failed on the proposal, so we're staying on the single rear tire. So then people ask, how do you get to what that tire is? And what we do is when we send out the applications for the nationals, we insist on there that they list two tires.
Okay.
The reason we do that is because in case those applications have to be in before the AGM. So in case there is that rule had passed, we would then have two tire choices.
Right.
So the way we've done it, which at the moment is, I think, the fairest way, is we look at their application and we go along and we go, okay, we got six national tracks. Five of the six tracks have picked the Mezzo. So we go to the Mezzo because it's the most popular choice. And I've not seen the applications for tires this year, so that will get announced. We got a meeting on the 25th, and that's what we'll look at then. So that is how the process works. I'm sure it will be on the Mezzo again because it works.
Mm-hmm.
People seem to like it, other people don't. But tires is it's a great item for a discussion. You look at it from all points of views. Me personally, as a Schumacher driver, I will still give my opinion because I'm a chairman. And the thing is, having seen what happened at the Worlds where they couldn't get the tires, it's not the guy's fault that Hone's obby action. He just didn't order enough, but when he needed them, they didn't.
It's not what you want, is it?
No, they didn't really have them. And it's funny when you talk to people that aren't involved in our national series from around the world, they all go, "Oh, you're so lucky you got a tire manufacturer on your island
that
supply you with the tires." Now, I know there will be people listening that go, "Oh, we got two Schumacher drivers on the podcast." They're just pumping their own brand. Now, if we, if there was another brand pumping out the tires, Schumacher would have to, it maybe have to be chosen a different way. But at the time being and at the moment, that's what the people that came to the AGM voted for, and that's how it gets done.
Things just keep it simple, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I've had people say to me, you must have had a nice little holiday on Schumacher because you got their tires in again. I don't even get a vote, so
you don't count.
I have no say in it whatsoever.
For those people that have only raced in the last, say, 10 years even, when we were doing nationals in the 90s, in the old days, we used to take like two hauler bags of tires because you didn't know someone was going to go out in practice with some weird combination that you didn't even think of, and it's like 2 seconds that faster, and you would have to have those tires or at least be able to get them on the day. So that was definitely worse, whatever way you look at it. We used to have Proline, Lossy tires, Ballistic Buggy, Schumacher, you name it. You had to have like 4 or 5 sets of each in all different compounds just in case. And that was mad. I think my dad used to have a lot of them on like sale or return from what was Apex models. You know, he used to have a box full of tires that we just used to borrow just in case. And that was definitely worse, whatever way you look at it.
Exactly. And I think, I'm not going to put words on it, but I think that's somewhat what 8th is suffering from a little bit. Because there are
okay, because you can run what you want,
tires, right? You can run what you want, but
and they're separate, specific brands, aren't they, that sponsor drivers with tires, I suppose.
But my argument, I guess, for 8th is they're racing. You know, we're mostly racing on Astro, where they're racing on dirt, but different types of dirt. Dirt with Astro, right. You know, there's a bit more,
and they're doing 30-minute races at times as well, right? So I guess you need them to last.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think their situation is a little bit different to ours, you know. And I know I've spoke to people that said, "Oh, if we just had one tire in 8th, it'd be a lot more popular." But I'm not sure it would, because I think they'd be sliding around on maybe tires that don't work. So
yeah, it's something that just doesn't work at all. It's not much fun, is it? It needs to be okay at least.
Exactly. So, that's a fair question.
That's good. Yeah.
People just go.
I always wondered how it works.
should have made it up and said no. You can use whatever you want. Go out and buy everything.
Yeah. Panic. Send everyone to a mass panic.
Exactly. Yeah, watch them all go. Oh, no, it's a disaster.
In fact, the Euros in Teesside, someone started running medial pro tires at the time, which were like a French tire. You couldn't even, I'd never had them before. And they were having to cut and shut rears to make four-wheel drive fronts. And we just didn't even have an option. Couldn't get them either at the time. So you were stuck, and they were, that's not fun when it becomes a tire war.
No, that then becomes a lottery. And we don't want that. But, it's good old tires. It's and the other thing is people go, well, tire limits on the amount you can use. I think it's a great idea. And, they did it at the Worlds. They were forced to do it. But
because they couldn't get them,
You could have so many sets. But I think, as I've said before on this podcast, it worked there because the tire wear was quite low.
Right.
If the tire wear had been mega high, I think they would have had an issue.
But the last thing you want as well is people thinking, "Oh, I'm not going to run round 4 because I've saved my tires because I've already put it 3rd, for instance." It starts to breed a whole other mentality and tactics and stuff, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, like Essex Car Clash, I think for a couple of years now, I've been running it. I think to limit it to 2 sets.
Yeah,
and I think, they've got a system and it's been very
I think indoor on carpet stuff is. Yeah. It's fine, isn't it? But it's not a national championship at the end of the day, is it?
Yeah, I still think at a national championship, you should be able to turn up and run. You know, if you want to put a new set on every run, go for it. What I struggle with is there's a little bit of the mentality of you have to. But we talked about Mendip. You made a B. I think I had my best 2 results this year were Mendip and Boughton, 2 D finals. And I did both of those. And both qualifying runs on used tires.
Yeah.
On brand new. because I think sometimes a used tire for a lower grade driver like myself, it's a little bit easier to hang on to.
Or it's just, they're bedded in a right, they're not actually even that worn from, one run. It doesn't always have to be that, does it?
Exactly. So yeah, it's a, but as I've, I think, funny enough, heard on another podcast, you're not going to make everybody happy, but if you can make 50% of the people happy, you're doing all right. So that's
it's gonna be a good way to be.
And then someone probably just sit there and go, well, that's 50% of the Schumacher drivers. But those jokes and those comments are never going to go away, and I've just learned to be a big boy and take them. So
you got me by now.
Yeah, exactly. So so excellent. All right, Nick. Well, thank you for coming on our janky one person only podcast, because Joey couldn't really be bothered. He says,
"Oh, thanks for having me."
Yeah, and
he's
when you see Joey,
to me.
When you
did see did you ever see his brother racing? Did you know Dan when he raced?
So I met Dan for the first time at Joey's wedding.
Okay,
and I could even just tell. I could tell just by meeting him, he was faster than Joey.
That's what I was going to say. That's from my memory as well. He was definitely quicker.
He was definitely quicker, and just such a nice guy. I said to him, "Can you come and race and make Joey quit?" But he was a really cool guy. But I think he said he'd only ever come back racing if he could use a double X4. And it was the early 2000s or whatever, whenever he raced. But
blessing.
Apparently, says he liked his double X4. He said it,
They ran that car for about a 12-year period, I think, didn't they? In the end, that Velocity guys, I think they were still running it after car had come out. They went back to it.
I think I saw a picture. I think Darren Bloomfield was still running one and just destroying belts and all sorts of things on them. That geometry is still on current cars today, so the guys that designed
it broke and all that
really knew their stuff. So anyway, so no Joey. So the other thing, just while we're on here, is just say get well to Brian Preddy. He's in hospitals, had some surgery, and he's resting up. If anyone saw his post on Facebook, he's just shut down his website, Screws for RC, just while he recovers. So I hope you get soon, buddy, because I know you'll probably be sat in the hospital listening to this rubbish. He's like one of our five listeners, I think. So
thanks for the nomination, Brian, as well.
His words were, he'll have some good stories. He's an old school racer, so
few of us around.
Maybe when Brian's back and healthy, we'll get him on to tell us some of his great stories.
Definitely.
Yeah. So excellent. Well, we'll finish this up now. And Nick, I guess I will see you. When are you racing next?
So Slough this week, this Friday, and then Torchindor Sunday. And then we've got the VMR Jingle Bell race at MB, which is a vintage meeting, you'll be pleased to hear.
Excellent.
Just catch up with a load of people there. But I'll see you soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. You're not doing any of the works up series then?
No, it's just a bit too far for me.
Yeah, it's borderline too far, but I promised my wife I was only going to race once in the winter, once a month.
You'll do that.
And I'm picking works up because it's
not. I did used to do it in the old days, and it was brilliant even then. That court floor, it's awesome.
It's brilliant. Because, as I said hundreds of times, I hate carpet. No one's got that hit by now. Although I did go and race on carpet on Friday and actually won. So that shows you how rubbish everybody else. No, it's not a turn. It's not a turning point. It just shows you how good
those amazing, mostly those amazing new Schumacher tires, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. Because it certainly isn't any of my talent. Because I have zero of that. So. It was a good night. So, all right, Nick, well, take care, and I will see you at the races soon.
Will do, mate. Thanks again.
Cheers, buddy. No problem.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.